Good morning, coming up on 7:40 here on the Mighty 690. And it is time for a legislative update. We have joining us here in the studio State Representative Ron Bryce. Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
Good morning.
Hey, it's, yesterday was one of those first days. I was like, man, it was like summer. It felt like June yesterday.
Well, it'll change.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's on the way, man. We've been having our fair share of, you know, severe weather and everything. So, yeah, we're getting right into it.
Up in Topeka a couple nights ago, we had some I was at the State House. I left and I heard these sirens in the distance. And it took me a minute to realize they were tornado sirens.
Oh.
So they had some tornado activity. I think it went north of the city. I didn't hear of any critical injuries or deaths from it, but anyway, it is that time of year.
Yeah, that is absolutely for sure. So, hey, this morning, I know you have some updates for us, but you're also going to be entertaining some calls as well. If people want to be thinking about any questions they may have at 620-251-6909, a good opportunity for folks to maybe ask you a few things about what's going on.
Thank you. Yeah, I think I would really enjoy talking with people because there are some issues going on that I really need feedback on. And I'd like to know what people are thinking. But let me just say, first of all, thank you, everyone. I am thoroughly enjoying representing Montgomery County in the state capitol. It's been very, very exciting this session. And just to give you an overview, the session starts in early January. It goes into April, sometimes into May with the override session. And right now we are really in the thick of it. And also, we've had several groups come up and visit. I love that when you come to the state capitol and visit and get to see the artifacts, John Brown's sword, and different things. We had the Independence tennis teams. Both the boys and the girls are state champions for tennis, and we had them up there. We honored them in front of the whole house, gave them certificates. Uppercut Boxing out of Independence had several young people come and serve as pages, which means they serve for a day running errands for the different legislators in the session. Also, I believe it was yesterday, I had several people from St. Andrew Catholic School in Independence come by, and InterHab people came by the State House yesterday. It was very exciting. So if you're in Topeka making plans, please contact me. I'd be happy to show you around. One thing that was new this week, we had a new state representative. The previous state representative, Owen Donahoe, who has been there, he's from Shawnee. He retired just a couple days ago. He's had some health issues, and so he was replaced by Johnson County Republicans got together, because that's the process of doing it. And Angela Steens, S-T-I-E-N-S, is from Shawnee, and she is now the newest, most freshman of all House representatives. And it was great to meet her yesterday. Just wanted to also say yesterday was kind of a good day for Montgomery County, and I want to just have a shout out to Jim Kelly, because he worked for years on something to do with payday loans and how that's the mechanism of how that's operated. Yesterday we passed out of the House the Kansas Uniform Consumer Credit Code updates. It's House Bill 2247, and just thanks to Jim Kelly, because he put in years of effort on that, and I appreciate it very much. One thing, James, that's coming up, and I want to stick with mainly health care bills, because my interest as a physician and also on the health care committee, I want to go over mostly that, because there are hundreds of bills we could go over. But Medicaid expansion has been on a lot of people's minds over the last few years. And there's been a lot of controversy about that. There's been the House and the Senate leadership have really not, the last couple of years, had any hearings or any chance for a Medicaid expansion law to go into effect. The governor has had a statewide kind of a rally off and on for the past year or so, trying to generate support for Medicaid expansion. And so these forces are all coming together, and this coming Wednesday, in both the House and the Senate, the committees are going to have Medicaid expansion hearings, and that'll be a chance for the governor's people, perhaps the governor herself, to come, different ones representing different sides of the issue. And people may have opinions on Medicaid expansion. That's one reason why I was happy to have calls today. Some people are very opposed to it. Some people really appreciate it and think it would be a good thing. I have my own opinions, and I've done as much research as I can on what other states have encountered when they've expanded Medicaid. But I'd be happy to hear from anyone who wants to call in.
Yeah, so if you do want to call in and express maybe your opinion or ask a question here, I'd love to hear from you at 620-251-6909. Again, 620-251-6909 or 1-800-252-KGGF. And I guess I'll ask a question, you know, maybe kind of related to Medicaid expansion. I mean, we do have... we hear a lot about these critical access hospitals and the challenges maybe they face and that sort of thing. How much does that play into, you know, the Medicaid dollars and that sort of thing? What does all that kind of mean? What even is a critical access hospital?
Very good question. Yeah, critical access hospitals, that's a federal designation that the state doesn't have too much say over. But Coffeyville Regional Medical Center, I believe, recently did over the last week or so, become accepted as a critical access hospital. What that means is it's typically a rural hospital in a declining population area that's having trouble with budgetary problems and so forth. They agree to reduce the number of inpatients and number of services that they provide, and in exchange they get better reimbursement for their costs for Medicare and government payers, because normally a lot of times the government funded insurance programs like Medicare, Medicaid, they don't reimburse. A hospital spends $1,000, they might get, you know, pennies on the dollar for that patient. This helps them to have a cost report, an expense report, so that they will be able to recoup a lot of those costs, basically get reimbursed at a higher rate. And they do that in tandem with a higher level of care, say a tertiary hospital, where they can refer if someone has critical problems, specialty problems, they can refer them directly to the tertiary care hospital that they have an agreement with. One thing that also is similar in a way to critical access hospitals, and that's a bill that we've been looking at in the House, and it's the Rural Emergency Hospital Bill. And that's a House bill, a state bill that we're looking at that will correlate with federal changes, if they do make that change. Senator Moran, Senator Marshall are involved in Washington helping to do that. But this will be an even smaller type of facility. Say a hospital in a rural area has closed in the last few years. They can reopen as a rural emergency hospital. Basically, they'll have an emergency room, building to keep a patient for, say, one day, 23 hours or so, and have some services available. It'll be very limited. But they will also be reimbursed very well. In fact, it'll be about $3 million a year in basically extra funding on top of costs for these facilities. So they'll be very much able to recoup their costs. There are some other issues with conflicts with other existing local hospitals, and we can go into that later. And I offered an amendment on the floor that passed and kind of tanked the bill. But I can go over that later if you'd like.
Okay, well, we do have a caller on the line, so let's go ahead and go to the phones. Good morning, caller. What is your question or comment for Representative Ron Bryce?
I've got a comment. We live in Oklahoma, but we own property in Kansas also in the downtown, and I was going to recommend for Kansas not to legalize any of the marijuana stuff because it's just caused more problems here in Oklahoma, and you just see all the small farms of it going up, and it just makes some people more lazy, and it just kind of made some of the drug problem even worse, and it caused more crime with people breaking in, trying to steal more stuff, and trying to support their bad habit.
Well, thank you, caller. I ought to tell you that about a week ago, I believe it was last week, I was on a panel at the University of Tulsa Law School. There was a panel, and the all-day symposium on legalization of marijuana and what it's done to Oklahoma and what can be done for potentially recreational marijuana. And let me just say, my position is that legalization of marijuana, even if it's medical marijuana, is going down the wrong path. And I agree with you with a lot of that. The Oklahoma Bureau of Investigation, for instance, of course, marijuana, as you said, is legalized for medical uses in Oklahoma. They have, I believe at last count, 20,000 grow farms for marijuana in Oklahoma, they don't have the manpower. The cartels and other criminal elements from around the world, they can't keep up with all this stuff. And it's trafficked to states that don't have legalization of marijuana. For instance, the path to Wichita, which is a hub for distribution of marijuana in Kansas illegally, the Highway Patrol reports, and actually Sheriff Ron Wade reported recently, that there's huge, huge numbers of marijuana and fentanyl, and that's also a secondary thing that tends to be transported with it. But I was surprised by the lack of objectivity of the marijuana proponents at that symposium. I did my best to give scientific evidence. When I told them that as a medical doctor I could not recommend smoking marijuana for a pregnant woman because of bad effects, there were people who actually stood up and just confronted me on that I didn't know what I was talking about. And the lack of objectivity is very difficult for me to understand. If you think about it, legalization of a new drug usually goes through the Federal Food and Drug Administration so that there's safety and there's efficacy. In other words, it works and it's safe for the consumer. Well, actually, THC, the component of marijuana that is active, it is legalized through prescriptions. If you have a prescription, you can buy THC, you know, tablets, pills, the active ingredient marijuana. But because it's been shown to have some efficacy, in other words, it works for some things, and it's been ruled safe enough so that it can be prescribed. But what the medical marijuana proponents want to do is have the actual marijuana plant as a medication. And they will not go through the FDA like all other drugs have to go through. They will not prove safety because they can't. They do not prove efficacy because it's difficult. And instead, they go to state legislators. Now think about this. The Food and Drug Administration has a whole group of statisticians, pharmacologists, people specializing in physiology. They can evaluate all these studies and what marijuana does and see if it's safe and effective. If you go to a state legislator and you just tell them sob stories, you know, grandma has Parkinson's and she only gets relief if she smokes a joint, et cetera, et cetera. The state legislators don't have any expertise in pharmacology, physiology, statistics. They don't know any of that. And so that's the route that the marijuana legalization people are doing. They're going to the state legislators instead of through the appropriate FDA channels. And to me, that's a problem. And so my opinion is we need to really put the brakes on marijuana legalizations because we've seen what it's done in California. Colorado. We've seen what it's done in neighboring states like Oklahoma. And if anybody has objective proof, I'd be happy to listen to them. But so far, the marijuana proponents have not been able to show me anything that's changing my mind.
I agree on all that. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Okay, and we do have a little more time. If you have a question or a comment for Representative Ron Bryce, 620-251-6909 or 1-800-252-KGGF. And Ron, I know that there's also been some talk kind of on another front here of healthcare, some bills related to minors and healthcare and all that sort of thing.
That is really close to my heart. I had several people come to me over the last year telling me that their children who are under the age of 18 have been treated by medical facilities without the parents' consent and without even the parents' knowledge. And at first when I heard that, I really didn't believe it because I work in emergency rooms and I never treat a minor without parent consent unless it's just a dire emergency and it's a life and death situation. Of course we do. But as soon as the parent comes in, we get their consent and we inform them what's going on. So I looked into this and I guess the world has changed under our feet over the last several years, excuse me. And so, sure enough, there's something that's mentioned in legal literature as the mature minor doctrine. And that means that a healthcare facility, a social worker, a healthcare provider can say, okay, this 14-year-old is mature. And so we don't need their parents' consent. We can treat this minor however they as a child approve of, and we don't even have to mention it to the parents. to me, that just turns things on its head, because I always want to ask, you know, whose child is this? Whose children are they? You know, if I really believe the parents have the primary responsibility for raising and caring for their children, not a government agency, not a school district, not somebody else, not a healthcare provider. It's the parents that have the primary responsibility, and I think they ought to be informed, they ought to give consent. So I looked into this a little more, and sure enough, there are a lot of loopholes in this. So I came up with a bill that's being heard now in the healthcare committee. It's House Bill 2793, and working very diligently with the healthcare chairman, Brenda Landwehr. And we are creating a bill that would have parents involved in saying what their children should be treated for, and informed that the child is being treated. And it surprises me that the pushback that I get from that. And it really does surprise me, because apparently there are a lot of healthcare facilities, and the School Nurse Association especially has pushed back on this. That they just don't want to have parents' consent. They don't want to inform parents. But I believe that's the right thing to do. And so we're going to push forward with House Bill 2793. Should have it next week or so on the House floor for a debate, and hopefully we'll pass that out.
Okay, and then we have had, as we get closer to the end of our time together, I just wanted to check on here. I know there's also been this bill, and I didn't know how related this was, but you know, the AP and headlines will talk about this Kansas trying to ban gender-affirming care. You know, obviously they're going to call different things in their headlines and that sort of thing, but I didn't know if it was this at all related, or is this a separate bill that's being talked about?
Well, this is hand-in-glove kind of thing with it, because... but it's a separate issue. And this week on Tuesday, the House did pass a bill that would ban what's called gender-affirming care. And we don't have a lot of time left here, but it basically bans surgery to change a boy's body as much as possible into a girl's, and vice versa. It bans use of puberty-blocking drugs to prevent a child from undergoing puberty. And it bans opposite sex hormones. In other words, you don't give female hormones to a boy, and you don't give male hormones to a girl. And this applies up to, including age 17. If you turn 18 and you want to do something, and you know it's your body and you're considered a mature adult at that point, you can do it. But this is to protect the children, because it's not just a moral issue, but we can also look at objective data now. The last year or two, there have been many, many studies that show these children, 85% on average, there's 11 studies that show 85% will change their minds if you just give them a couple years. You know, a child 8, 10, 12 years old is confused about their gender. If you give them support, you treat any concomitant or coexisting psychiatric illnesses, 85% will resolve and over a couple of years. But sometimes these kids make these decisions at a young age, and the parents are kind of goaded into it. They say, do you want a live daughter or a dead son, you know, or a live son or a dead daughter? And I think that's unethical, but I hear time and time again people that give me reports that that's what they're told, and the children are given these treatments that have been proven to be ineffective for gender dysphoria, ineffective for preventing suicide. What we need to do is treat these children appropriately with scientifically proven methods, and treat their concomitant psychiatric illnesses, and don't push them into this political agenda that we're encountering every day in the state house.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate that is really what it's turned into. As we have about a minute left, Representative Bryce, anything else you'd like to share with us?
Well, I just want to say thank you. It's been an honor to serve this past year and a half, Montgomery County, District 11. Please come up, visit at Topeka. I'd be happy to show you around. It's really like a museum there at the State House. I'd love to show you around. Love to visit with you. Give me a call or Facebook. It's Ron Bryce for Kansas. Follow me on Facebook, and I appreciate it very much.
Excellent. Well, sir, we appreciate you coming on by. Looking forward to chatting again here. Looks like we actually have you on the schedule for the end of the month, because we have 5 Fridays this month.
Well, we'll have plenty of material by then, I'm sure.
Okay, very good. Hey, on the way, we do have our Ask the Expert segment. We are going to be talking with Charles Skank from Skank Insurance. He's actually going to be giving us a report from overseas where he is right now. So that is very exciting. We're going to hear about some travel updates there. Looking for gradual clearing skies today in mid-60s. We have news coming up next here on the Mighty 690 KGGF.